W 1590 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green Bay, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. There were more than 50 tornadoes reported in a 24-hour period in several states. One of them was described as catastrophic by the National Weather Service. That struck near Little Rock, Arkansas. Five people were killed in Arkansas. There was no tornado, but there was severe weather in Belvidere, Illinois, where a roof collapsed on a theater. Gabrielle Llewellyn was inside.
There was a bunch of guys that, you know, got a bunch of people that went over and they lifted the piece of the ceiling off of, you know, whoever was under there.
At least 28 people there were hurt. The death toll from the severe weather now stands at 10 people. It's after one person was found dead in Madison County, Alabama. Sources familiar with the case tell ABC News that former President Trump's facing around two dozen criminal counts, including some felonies related to payments made to adult actress Stormy Daniels. He'll be arraigned Tuesday. And Pope Francis says he'll celebrate Palm Sunday Mass after he was released from a Rome hospital today. This is ABC News. President Biden called on Russia to release American journalist Evan Gershkovich, who was arrested Wednesday on espionage charges that the White House and The Wall Street Journal call ridiculous. ABC's Stephanie Ramos.
A spokesman for the Kremlin, Dmitry Peskov, doubling down on Russia's claims Gershkovich was caught red-handed collecting state secrets for the U.S. The Wall Street Journal, which has denied the allegations, saying in an op-ed, the timing of the arrest looks like a calculated provocation to embarrass the U.S. and intimidate the foreign press.
Change coming to Twitter today. It's now charging users for a blue check mark. Before today, it meant verify, but now it just means they're paying $8 a month to use Twitter Blue. Twitter says official organizations and some government officials will still be verified with a gray check mark. And police in St. Petersburg, Florida, say the body of a two-year-old boy was found in the jaws of an alligator in a lake. There had been a search for the boy since his mother was killed. The boy's father will be charged with two counts of first-degree murder. Brian Clark, ABC News.
Talking to your kids about the dangers of vaping can be hard. Getting them to listen to hot gossip is easy. So here's some drama you could share with your kid. Dude, did you hear about Cassie and Jake? No, but did you hear that vaping can cause irreversible lung damage and nicotine affects brain development? Nuh-uh. You don't need to gossip if you want to have an open conversation about vaping. So if you want to get tips on when and how to talk to your kids, visit talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
You know him as the nose tackle for the green and gold. 1993 to 1999, and again 2001 to 2003. 125 games, 292 tackles, 7 sacks, and a Super Bowl ring. But there's more to life than stats, and there's more to life than football. You're about to find out. Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger. Featuring Packers legend Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. Saturday and Sunday at 1 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
The Cripes Cast with me, Charlie Behrens, and I'll tell you what, it's more fun than tipping cows. And actually, you shouldn't really tip the cows, okay? They don't tip as easy as they think, and they might kick you in the... Never mind.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. President Biden wants to raise taxes on Americans earning more than $400,000 a year. The rate would go from the current 3.8% to 5%. The new revenue would be used to shore up Medicare. Some of the biggest supporters of the bill are those who would get taxed the most. More from Eric Galatis.
Morris Pearl with the group Patriotic Millionaire says there's more than enough money to fund Medicare. He argues the wealthiest Americans, especially those living off of their investments, can and should be paying more.
We can ask the financially challenged people who need Medicare to sacrifice more by having less medical care, or we can ask the ultra-rich to sacrifice more by being a little bit less ultra-rich.
Biden's proposal would keep Medicare solvent for at least the next 25 years, according to estimates by the Medicare Office of the Chief Actuary. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell has promised it will not advance in Congress. Critics say raising taxes would hurt the economy. They argue that people would spend less if their earnings drop. Pearl agrees that the economy depends on consumer spending and says working Americans who spend most of what they bring home should be allowed to keep more of their money.
The very rich people are not going to spend more money. They'll just become a little bit richer.
More than 65 million people across the U.S. depend on Medicare coverage, but the fund's trustees warn that cuts to benefits will be necessary by 2028 without increased revenues. Pearl notes that the nation's economy was strong under the Republican Eisenhower administration, when the wealthiest Americans paid tax rates up to 90% on their second, third, and fourth millions.
And there's no reason why people who make a lot of money now should be paying not the same tax rate as people who work for a living, but actually lower tax rates. We need to change the system.
This is Eric Gladys reporting.
And you're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
The spring election is Tuesday, April 4th. It's being called one of the most important in the country, with candidates for one state Supreme Court seat on the ballot.
Vote. Then tune to your local Civic Media radio station for coverage you won't find anywhere else. It kicks off at 7 p.m. with a special As Goes Wisconsin. Then at 8, News Director Terry Bell has results with reporters checking in from around the state.
Election coverage live Tuesday, April 4th, starting at 7 on your local Civic Media radio station, streaming on the Civic Media app.
VA has a new life insurance program for veterans with service-connected disabilities called Veterans Affairs Life Insurance, or VA Life. VA Life benefits include up to $40,000 in coverage, no medical questions to enroll, and no time limit to apply if you are age 80 or under. Veterans can apply, receive an instant decision, and manage their policy online. Learn more about VA Life or apply online by visiting va.gov/life-insurance. Protect those who matter most with VA Life Insurance.
Welcome. Grab your favorite morning beverage and join us for Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel.
You don't know me, but I'm your brother.
Sampling the news desserts of the week, here is your host, Jim Santel.
Good morning. It is Saturday, April 1, and this is the 41st episode of Morning Cannolis. Welcome to our broadcast on what is a modestly snowy morning in downtown Waukesha. This is a production of Civic Media, and although we're coming to you from the studios of WAUK in Waukesha, we are broadcasting through the Civic Media outlets at places throughout the state of Wisconsin. Thank you so much for joining me at 9 o'clock this morning. We're on the air, as always, this morning for a couple of hours talking about the major news of the week. Specifically, this is our weekend review, our analysis, our discussion of the most important stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Delighted to have you with me and my ever-faithful and effective and competent and professional producer, Kelvin. Together, we're taking your calls here at the studios of WAUK here on our program. That phone number is 844-967-2789. One more time, that phone number, 844-967-2789. My name is Jim Santel. I'm delighted once again that you have chosen to be with me and with Calvin, and with some of our listeners who may call in to talk this morning for the next 2 hours about those things that are animating our lives and our livelihoods here in the United States of America and beyond. As always, our syllabus this morning, lots and lots of things to get to, ambitious but achievable, and hopefully for you and anyone else listening, informative and inspiring as well about things that we should do going forward. We always ask about these stories in law, government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Three fundamental questions. What happened? What do we know with certainty? What are the facts of the case? What do we know as a predicate, a foundational understanding to inform our discussion and our appreciation for the world in which we live? Second, why is that news? Why are those events important? Why should we care about those things? What makes them relevant? What makes them material to our lives and our livelihood? And third, under many circumstances, what should we do? What should we be inspired to do? What are our appropriate responses to the news? Why it's important? What should we do in response, if anything? And most often, when it comes to justice and law and government in America, there are things that we can and should do as animated and concerned residents of the state of Wisconsin, as animated and concerned residents of these United States of America. Typically, at this time in our broadcast, I do a segment called Let's Look Back in History, What Happened Today in History, and we will be continuing that from time to time on the broadcast of Morning Cannolis right here on the broadcast studios of WAUK and Civic Media. But this morning on our 41st program, introducing a new segment that will often begin our show. I'm calling it Undiscovered Justice. Undiscovered Justice. Not completely undiscovered, perhaps a little bit of a misnomer, but undiscovered justice in the sense that a story, a major story, that may have escaped your attention, perhaps even my attention, until I prepare for our show. A story, a news item that is significant, but is below the headlines, maybe even on page 4, 5, 6, maybe not in the pages of our newspapers at all, but nonetheless related to justice and government and the aspiration for the enforcement of law in all of the regions of our lives and livelihoods. Undiscovered Justice, initiating this morning with a story that was, in fact, in the news somewhat, but plainly eclipsed. Eclipsed wildly, as you know, by another story coming out of New York and coming out of the East Coast, which we will get to. We will talk about the indictment of the former president in this hour and certainly next, and take your phone calls on that. Before we get to that, let's do some undiscovered justice, a story that you probably saw the headlines about, but nonetheless didn't have time, perhaps, didn't have the focus from the media to understand why it is so important. And for this particular story, our initial segment of undiscovered justice, we're going to leave our United States of America and go overseas to the Middle East, to our ally, a nation created in the wake of World War II, and that, of course, is Israel. This past week, some very significant things going on with respect to the rule of law, the role that Israeli citizens play in creating and in impacting their government in ways that are important to them, and I would offer to us as well some great lessons, not only for the Israelis, but for us right here in America, about what happened in Israel in recent weeks, coming to a head and still at a head in that allied nation with us, in the Middle East. What happened? Well, we know that several weeks ago, the newly elected and re-elected prime minister of the nation, Benjamin Netanyahu, sometimes called Bibi, upon his return to government after being out of government, voted out his leading party out of power for a period of time, back in government. And we also know that Benjamin Netanyahu has been under investigation, under the cloud, if you will, of prosecution for many, many years, in particular three different cases, all alleging various kinds of corruption. That is significant for reasons that I will get to in just a moment or so. But he has come back into office. And again, perhaps a reflection on what may be happening in America, too, the fact that you are under charges, under indictment there in Israel, does not prevent you from serving in the highest elected office in that land. And that's what Benjamin Netanyahu is doing right now as the leader not only of his party in the parliament, it's called the Knesset, but also plainly as the leader of the Israeli nation at this time. Benjamin Netanyahu, a number of weeks ago, comes back into power and says through his party, that he is going to effect some major reforms when it comes to the judiciary. This Netanyahu plan is in response to what Netanyahu and his affiliates in his ultra-Orthodox political party feel is a Supreme Court and a judicial system generally in the state of Israel, the Republic of Israel, that, as he said, is much too liberal, blocking some of his initiatives, things he wants to do. And so he responds by doing what? He says, you know what, we're going to pass through our Knesset, through the parliament here, a number of reforms based upon our power, because we can, in fact, do it right now. We're going to propose and try to pass some reforms, and that's describing it generously, really attempts to undermine and undercut the legitimacy of an independent judiciary, independent judges and justices in republic. What in particular does he do? He says that we're going to make the justices, the judges, basically subject to our political control, and in particular, the decisions and whims and discretions and judgments of his political party inside the parliament. What in particular? Weakening the independence of those judges. He proposes a number of different things that should be stunning to you, and indeed were stunning to the people, remain stunning to the people of Israel to this day. He says, as a result of the parliamentary coalition that he has put together, he's going to exercise more control over things like appointments to the judiciary, the decisions about who is going to serve as the president of the Supreme Court there. Very significant proposal to implement, according to this Netanyahu plan, a plan to overturn Supreme Court decisions, not by a vote, which can be done legislatively right here in America, as it can be done there in Israel, but basically by political fiat, the power to overturn Supreme Court decisions with which the ruling party does not agree. A huge, huge problem there. Plans also to override decisions, administrative, others of the government, again, through his political power there in Israel and his position right now as the leader of the political party in the ruling political party in Israel. The question I propose, and the question that a number of great numbers, thousands, millions of Israelis have responded to affirmatively is, what does that mean to you? What does that mean when a leader of a government, our government, the Israeli government at this point in its history, says, I'm going to change the balance of power. I'm going to affect the balance of power between, and yes, they've got the same sort of system that we have, a balance between an executive branch, which really is the prime minister, the legislative branch, which is the inside, also the prime minister is inside, of course, the Knesset, but has these great executive powers, and also the legislative power, the Knesset itself, and the judiciary, the balance that goes on between those three, the checks and balances that we know well, our system, again, we don't have a parliament here in the United States, but many countries do, and all of them fundamentally premised upon this notion of an independent judiciary that can make decisions, can review cases, and issue rulings, as we have talked a lot on this program about the important issues in what? In healthcare, in academics, in commerce, in politics, in voting, all kinds of things out there, in the arts, for example, in the environment, all kinds of things, economics that are important to all of us. The notion that in judiciary, a judicial branch, is independent is fundamental. It's basic to any republic, any Western, any Eastern republic that values the rule of law on the face of our planet. And so Netanyahu's plan to undermine that, to pull back and basically to consolidate power, to tell the judiciary what it is and is not going to be doing, to unilaterally, through the exercise of his power in the Knesset, through his present role as the prime minister, to overrule those decisions, to tell them what their leadership is all about, plainly to rein them in if, in fact, they do things that he does not like. That is more than a check. That's more than a balance to it. That is the usurpation of judicial authority and the exercise of authority in an executive way over an independent branch of government. When I was in Iraq, a huge amount of focus on the notion of an emerging judiciary that had to be independent, yes, there too, of the parliament, and they also have a parliament in the Iraqi Republic today. They pursue that mechanism, that reestablished form of government after Saddam Hussein. A huge amount of time that we spent ensuring that the judiciary is independent. Why? So that as that young, now reemerging republic called Iraq makes decisions about his future, it can do so with appropriate balances between the branches of government, ensuring that the parliament does not tell the judiciary what to do and invades that independent authority. All of that then going on in the Republic of Israel in recent weeks, not without pushback. And we know, for example, that the defense minister, Netanyahu's own defense minister, came forward and said, you know what, this should not happen, or at least there should be a pause put on it until we can thoughtfully think about it more. And right after this break, we're going to talk more about what happened to that defense minister, and more significantly for the rule of law this morning on Undiscovered Justice, this segment, what it means for us. Stay with us for that all-important discussion.
The spring election is Tuesday, April 4th. It's being called one of the most important in the country, with candidates for one state Supreme Court seat on the ballot.
Vote. Then tune to your local Civic Media radio station for coverage you won't find anywhere else. It kicks off at 7 p.m. with a special As Goes Wisconsin. Then at 8, News Director Terry Bell has results with reporters checking in from around the state.
Election coverage live Tuesday, April 4th, starting at 7 on your local Civic Media radio station, streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is the story of a very special woman. Just a few knew about her superpowers. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Talking to your kids about the dangers of vaping can be hard. Getting them to listen to hot gossip is easy. So here's some drama you could share with your kid.
Dude, did you hear about Cassie and Jake?
No, but did you hear that vaping can cause irreversible lung damage and nicotine affects brain development?
Nuh-uh.
You don't need to gossip if you want to have an open conversation about vaping. So if you want to get tips on when and how to talk to your kids, visit talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
Here's your updated forecast. A winter weather advisory continues until 1 p.m. this afternoon. Mainly sunny skies and calm this afternoon with a chance of snow. Highs around 36. North winds 20 to 25 miles an hour. Clear skies and quiet tonight. Lows dip down to about 18. Slight chance for scattered rain showers tomorrow. Daytime highs approaching 43. Overcast skies. About an inch of snow today. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Ray Miller. Right now, it's 30.
This is Civic Media for the Fox Valley.
UKRadio.com.
We are back in this next segment of Morning Cannolis. Thank you for joining me so very much on this Saturday morning, April 1, when we're talking, as always, this hour and next hour, but major stories, major news in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Inaugurating this morning, as I did right before the first break here, a new segment which we're going to visit from time to time down the road called Undiscovered Justice, our analysis of a story that may not have captured the full headlines that it otherwise should. And this morning, talking about what's happening in Israel right now and this attempt by the present prime minister, his name is Benjamin Netanyahu, to overtake the judicial system, undermine its authority, and to put in place some prerogatives of his own party and of his own prerogative to make decisions about what the judiciary should and should not do, appointments, overruling decisions, impacting the independence of the judiciary there in the Republic of Israel. Netanyahu, of course, also probably doing this, not only because of his view that the Supreme Court and other judges there in Israel, much too liberal, as he says, and therefore not supporting him in the things that he wants to do, his ultra-Orthodox political party wants to do, but also, as we know, he is facing some very serious corruption charges there, a package of three cases bundled together now in front of the judiciary. And it may well be that Netanyahu's overall purpose, if in fact this plan goes ahead, would be to block the ability of the judiciary to adjudicate his case, at a minimum to declare him unfit for office, which is something that the judiciary there could do. So again, an attempt by the prime minister not only to impact the judiciary and its prerogatives, its independence, perhaps also to put himself in a position where he will not be facing the kinds of criminal charges that, again, anyone should face. Again, shades of what's going on right now in America, right? So what happened? And why is this story so important? Again, it's been in the news, but again, eclipsed by other things going on this past week in our own nation, certainly eclipsed by the major news medias and media and their attention to a singular story that we will, in fact, get to later in this hour and next as well. What happened? Well, people responded. People responded in Israel and said, no, we're not going to do that. I am reminded, as I looked at the story of what's happening the last several weeks, continuing this week and probably into next week, of the infamous line in William Shakespeare's Henry VI, Part 2. For those of you who are purists, it's in Act 4, Scene 2. You've got a sort of a rough and tumble character named Dick the Butcher, who along with other authorities is planning to overthrow the throne, kind of a band of pretenders, and talks about improving the country by doing what? He says, let's kill all the lawyers. The first thing we do, let's kill all the lawyers, and sometimes interpreted to be simply another variation on a joke about lawyers, which sometimes are humorous. Acknowledging that completely as a lawyer myself, this quote, however, misinterpreted to be a joke about lawyers, just the opposite, actually. What Shakespeare was talking about is this notion that if indeed you undermine the lawyers, and I would offer that that's simply a euphemism, sort of a singular word for the system of rule of law, judges, justices, law enforcement, the ways that things should work to ensure the delivery of fair justice. Yes, indeed, Henry VI's reign, others there in the admittedly somewhat fictitious, but nonetheless premised on history, time of Henry VI. What is the notion that Dick the Butcher is advocating? We get rid of the justice system. We get rid of judges. We get rid of lawyers as well. We get rid of all the trappings of that, and we can do what we want. We can finally establish, we can overthrow the throne, we can overthrow the trappings of government and put ourselves, the henchmen that we are. He was, in fact, a killer, as his name implies, Dick the Butcher. We can put ourselves in power and usurp the authority of the established regime by what? By getting rid of the judiciary. And I would offer that while the comparison between Dick the Butcher and the Prime Minister of Israel is at best strained, do not mean to make that comparison directly. The reality is that that's what's animating. That's what's happening here. And it was what the Israeli citizenry responded to last week and probably going forward as well. What happened? Well, just before the break, I said that the defense minister came forward and said, you know what, we can't do this. I'm a part of government. I understand the rule of law. I understand the importance of having judges who are independent and a Supreme Court that make decisions about the entitlement, the ability, the capacity, if you will, of the prime minister to be fit or unfit for office. He gets all that. And what happens, of course, is that Netanyahu says, all right, for saying that, I'm firing you. I'm terminating your role. Again, the kind of thing that someone who's out to undermine government generally by establishing all power in himself, perhaps herself as well. That's the kind of thing you do. Once again, you kill the speakers of those kinds of advocacy in the opposite direction. His particular role, that is the defense minister's role, may somewhat still be up for grabs, if you will, somewhat subject to review. But he did that. And in the wake of that, and even before that, again, what happened and why is this story in this segment we're calling Undiscovered Justice so very, very important? Because it is a symbol, a sign, an illustration of what people in a republic can and should do when their government attempts to undermine the basic tenets, the fundamental trappings of their government. Now, in Israel, unlike the United States, there is not a constitution. They've got a parliamentary system. And for that reason, the role of the judges in the Supreme Court is especially important. They don't have a Bill of Rights to look to. And so what they do look to are all sorts of rules and regulations and laws and opinions that are codified by the judges, making the role in the Republic of Israel, the country, the nation of Israel, all the more important. And what the people of Israel said was, no, no, Mr. Prime Minister, we're not going to let you do this. And what they said was, not only are we not going to let you do this, but we're going to take to the streets and we're going to protest. Millions and millions of people last week and probably continuing this week went out into the streets, not simply protesting with signs and moving up and down streets, but basically shutting the nation down. But after this break, I'm going to talk about the final segment here, what happened in Israel and lessons we draw from what happened there and the pushback by independent people in Israel to ensure the future of their nation.
Fox Valley, regional and state news and commentary for us to find common ground. Civic Media.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. There were more than 50 tornadoes reported in a 24-hour period in several states. One of them was described as catastrophic by the National Weather Service. That struck near Little Rock, Arkansas. Five people were killed in Arkansas. There was no tornado, but there was severe weather in Belvedere, Illinois, where a roof collapsed on a theater. Gabrielle Llewellyn was inside.
There was a bunch of guys that, you know, got a bunch of people that went over and they lifted the piece of the ceiling off of, you know, whoever was under there.
At least 28 people there were hurt. The death toll from the severe weather now stands at 10 people. It's after one person was found dead in Madison County, Alabama. Sources familiar with the case tell ABC News that former President Trump's facing around two dozen criminal counts, including some felonies related to payments made to adult actress Stormy Daniels. He'll be arraigned Tuesday. And Pope Francis says he'll celebrate Palm Sunday Mass after he was released from a Rome hospital today. This is ABC News.
Great to listen to while having a Linies and grilling some Sheboygan brats. The Cripes Cast with me, Charlie Behrens, on Civic Media. And don't forget the Civic Media app.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Matnair. Here's what you need to know. More spring weather in Wisconsin. Rain and possible thunderstorms will eventually turn over to snow, but little to no accumulation is expected. However, be prepared for possible strong thunderstorms and strong winds through Saturday. More solar energy is coming to the state. 12 utility solar arrays will be built across Wisconsin over the next 2 years. 9 Wisconsin electric cooperatives are working in partnership with One Energy Renewables of Madison. Together, they'll produce 22 megawatts of new solar generation, adding enough electricity to power 4,000 homes for rural co-op members. The ground under the solar arrays will be restored with pasture, prairie grasses, and wildflowers. And the Brewers lose their season opener to the Chicago Cubs in a 4-0 shutout. I'm Jane Matnair. This is Civic Media News.
You know him as the nose tackle for the green and gold.
1993 to 1999, and again 2001 to 2003.
125 games, 292 tackles, 7 sacks, and a Super Bowl ring. But there's more to life than stats, and there's more to life than football.
You're about to find out.
Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, featuring Packers legend Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram.
Saturday and Sunday at 1 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
The spring election is Tuesday, April 4th. It's being called one of the most important in the country, with candidates for one state Supreme Court seat on the ballot.
Vote. Then tune to your local Civic Media radio station for coverage you won't find anywhere else.
It kicks off at 7 p.m. with a special As Goes Wisconsin.
Then at 8, News Director Terry Bell has results with reporters checking in from around the state.
Election coverage live Tuesday, April 4th, starting at 7 on your local Civic Media radio station, streaming on the Civic Media app.
VA has a new life insurance program for veterans with service-connected disabilities called Veterans Affairs Life Insurance, or VA Life. VA Life benefits include up to $40,000 in coverage, no medical questions to enroll, and no time limit to apply if you are age 80 or under. Veterans can apply, receive an instant decision, and manage their policy online. Learn more about VA Life or apply online by visiting va.gov/life-insurance. Protect those who matter most with VA Life Insurance.
We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Again, this morning, April 1 in the United States of America, talking, however, this morning in our news segment called Undiscovered Justice about what's going on in Israel as an important rule of law story, a lesson, some guidance, if you will, for the United States of America as well. Because what happened in the past couple of weeks among and coming out of the outrage by the Israeli population? The Israeli population took the streets in protest, yes. no belief that there was a violent protest. But what did they do in response to Benjamin Netanyahu's proposal to affect the balance of power between the judiciary and his own party in the Knesset, his own position under indictment, under charges for corruption there? The Israeli population rose up and said, no, we're not going to tolerate that. We're not going to tolerate your termination of the defense minister who spoke about justice and getting rid of him just because of his advocacy in favor of the right thing. We are going to prevent you from doing this. And sure enough, what did they do? They went out into the streets and more. They blocked the highways of major places throughout this important nation. They burned bonfires in Tel Aviv, some main arteries in and out. Again, no one harmed, but nonetheless, stopping the flow of commerce, of traffic in and around and through Tel Aviv, stopped the operation of Ben-Gurion Airport in Tel Aviv, closed the airport down from international and national travel. How stunning is that? There were national strikes from major businesses, commercial entities around the country. Hospitals, medical providers, healthcare providers canceled anything but the most important surgeries and procedures. Non-urgent elective measures canceled as a result of this. Schools and universities around the country likewise closed, not only to indicate their outrage for what is happening at the hands of Benjamin Netanyahu, but also to signal the support that the judiciary has among their group. The military. Military reservists threatened not to be available if there was an event that required their involvement. All these things and more. Take a look at the photographs. Take a look at some of the reporting on this story coming out of Israel about how the people said, you know what, we're not going to tolerate this. We're not going to let it happen. And indeed, by virtue of their very strong, nonviolent, admittedly very strong and very clear and very articulate and very powerful response to this proposal to undermine the judiciary in Israel. What happened? Benjamin Netanyahu backed down. He said, you know what? Okay, let's put this on hold, which is his way of saying, you've got me. You have told me that this is not going to happen. And even somebody who may have had the votes to do this in the parliament, he's established a coalition there. A big question about whether that's true or not, given the pushback by the Israeli citizenry. But even if he could have done it, he was wise enough, probably based upon some of his counselors as well, inside his own very ultra-Orthodox political party, wise enough to understand he was not going to be able to go forward with this, and suspended all of this and prevented the usurpation by his forces of the judiciary, made that an event, a circumstance, a proposal that at least for today, is no longer on the table in Israel. He simply said, we're suspending it, going to engage in talks with the other side, which perhaps once again is political speak for recognizing that this cannot happen. Unbelievable, a very strong and articulate way of understanding the power of the population to respond to things that government does that are inappropriate and contrary to the basic core values of the nation. I'm not talking necessarily about differences of policy, but when the very core of government is threatened, as it is in this case, the response by the Israeli people was, I would offer to you a really compelling, telling instruction about how all Americans should also respond if indeed in the prior administration, perhaps in a future administration also, threats to our very democracy that we saw on January 6th, threats to our democracy to this day that continue, things we need to be thoughtful about, asking, as I have before, what are we prepared to do? What are the Israelis prepared to do to ensure the future of their nation? What are we prepared to do to ensure the integrity, the future of our republic as well? Interestingly, the footnote to all of this, of course, it has caused some diplomatic dust-ups between the Israeli nation and our nation. Mr. Netanyahu scheduled to come to the United States. The president of our nation, Joe Biden, saying let's not invite him right now, sending some signals, some strong signals, clearly articulating his view that what's happening there in Israel should not be happening. And all of that, again, causing some diplomatic dust-up. I would offer that the more important issue is what the Israeli people themselves did. In an accidental twist of timing,
Mr. Netanyahu, just on Wednesday, participated virtually in something called the Summit for Democracy, co-hosted by the United States. And here is what he said. Netanyahu said he described Israel as a beacon of liberty and shared prosperity in the heart of the Middle East. You may have noticed Israel is undergoing, in its robust democracy, a very intensive public debate. This is Netanyahu now speaking. And the debate is, how do we ensure a proper democracy? Absolutely, Mr. Prime Minister. Democracy, he said, means the will of the people as expressed by majority, and it also means protection of civil rights, individual rights. It's the balance between the two. Glad you understand that, Mr. Prime Minister. Hopefully, as we go forward with this story here on our new segment called Undiscovered Justice, that will animate what goes on in Israel and also some great, unmistakable lessons for what we're doing right here in the United States of America. This morning, delighted, as always, to have your calls about this issue. And yes, we're going to get to many others here on our Saturday morning broadcast. Let's take some of those callers right now. Gary from Madison, glad to have you with us. Gary, your thought, your comment, your question.
You know, a little bit off subject, but the same subject. What's the difference between parliamentary Congress versus our Congress here in the United States? Without going too deep, is there a big difference? Is there advantages to have? I know Britain has parliamentary,
right. And
now is that a good thing? I mean, from what you know, parliamentary versus what we have here, a little difference. Thank you.
Great civics question, Gary. And you know what? We're going to chat about that perhaps down the road as well. The very simple and therefore very superficial answer. Also a part of a republic, right? An elective democracy or a republic where people's voices are heard. Their parliament is not exactly like our Congress, but has very similar roles to play. One of the significant differences, of course, is it's out of the parliament that we get the executive component, if you will. Benjamin Netanyahu, again, in power because his political party, this ultra-Orthodox party, is in power right now, or at least he's able to establish a government with his power, his party, and others. And they then, by virtue of his being the leader of the party, becomes also the prime minister. So a different process. But nonetheless, fundamentally, the Knesset there, similar in many ways to what our legislature does in Congress, passing laws, making decisions about how the country is going to be run and operated. The parliamentary procedure, plainly, much older than ours. Ours, of course, the Congress, a bicameral legislature, a House and a Senate, tracked pretty much by most states in the Union as well, but much younger than parliaments around the country and around the world, rather, and in countries around the world. And we'll talk more about that very good question down the road. But again, fundamentally, a sign of a republic that does respond to the elected population out there. The elective population does send members of its own groups, if you will, to that parliament, and they then make decisions about what happens. Great question. Dana from La Crosse, also with us this morning. Glad to have you with us, Dana.
Good morning, Jim. Pleasure to be with you this morning. Say, you're talking about the power of people and protest and what they can do. I'm reminded of a story I heard yesterday, what's happening down in Texas, in Harris County. I don't know if you've heard of it, but their legislature down there in Texas is pushing through bills to allow them to essentially, for just Harris County only, and as we all know, it's the biggest county down there in Houston, they're going to have the power to just turn over an election if they don't like it and say, let's do it again. Fire election workers if they just don't like them, you know, in other words, if they're a Democrat. This is a flagrant abuse of our Constitution. I don't know how it can stand. It's easy to say, well, let's get out there and protest. But at the same time, Jim, they're passing laws that turn protests into felonies and terrorism charges. And I mean, what can we do?
Right. We just
can't keep waiting for elections and just slowly turn the tide that way.
Right, right. And I'm not making the advocacy this morning, of course, for out-and-out insurrection. We saw how that played out on January 6th. But this notion, once again, that all of us have some responsibility, a great point, Dana, in Harris County, of course, that is indeed going on. A legislative, again, usurpation, an invasion into other areas which should not be happening. And that's not going on just in Harris County, Dana, as you well know. It's going on around the country. We know about these Supreme Court cases pending right now before the United States Supreme Court, attempts out of states under this independent state legislature theory to advance the notion that legislatures have decisions when it comes to elective politics and who wins elections. That's right before our Supreme Court right now, coming out of North Carolina. All kinds of things like that. Again, the example of Israel. Israel reflected also in our own nation. And if nothing more, Dana, when we see these things in Harris County, other places around our nation, sometimes very close to home, we should ask the question, what are we prepared to do? It may well be nothing. We cannot, because of our circumstances, do anything. At the far extreme, of course, is violence, which we do not advocate for under any circumstances. What is that middle ground? What are you prepared to do to ensure that things like the things that happen in Harris County, the things that happen, frankly, in Israel, don't happen? We know what the answer of the Israelis was, which was, we're not going to stand for it. We're going to shut the country down and compel our own government, which we have elected, to respond better. Great point. Great observation. Appreciate that call. And Joe, also appreciate your calling in this morning from Madison. Glad to have you with us once again, Joe. Your thoughts or comments about our issue or others this morning on our broadcast.
Already a great discussion for setting up, and I think the line, what are we prepared to do, is one that we should return to again and again in future shows. Thank you for the discussion of Dick the Butcher. The line, first we kill all the lawyers, I've always thought was a Shakespeare line. You're killing your firewall. You're killing only protection that you have against brutality. You also used a line recent in this discussion where you said democracy as expressed by the majority. We don't have that right now because of gerrymandering, which sets up the question about the upcoming Supreme Court race. And I wanted to ask your opinion about one aspect of that, which is been an ad that has, and maybe you were going to be coming into this in the next hour, I don't know, but an ad that took the words of a woman who had been raped and her case was settled, adjudicated in a pro se, which is court, and the Republican dark money group used the words that she had to craft an ad in it to support Dan Kelly, which is absolutely antithetical to what this one woman wanted. She was happy with the sentence that Judge Protase, which had handed down in the rape case. It was a lighter sentence of 5 years, but this woman was a proponent of restorative justice and didn't want any sentence for this guy at all besides probation and restorative justice. Protase, which said that's not enough, he's got to serve some time. And this woman was approached by people from the Dan Kelly campaign and just said, I don't want to be involved in an ad for Dan Kelly. I don't support him. They took her words. They created an ad that was in support of Dan Kelly. And she said they just lied within this ad. What recourse does she have if she seeks to go? I understand it can't. You could maybe ask stations to pull this ad before the election occurs. But what other legal recourse does she have after the election concludes to say, you took my words, you took my story, you gutted me and opened me up to once again having to relive this situation in my life by this ad that you created against my will? Does she have any recourse? Does she have a recourse under fraud? If you could expand on that sometime during the hour and a half that's left in the show, I'd really appreciate it, Jim. I think it's an awful situation, and I can't imagine any woman and their friends and family having to endure this. Absolutely. So thank you very much. I'll await your answer.
Absolutely. Joe, important observation. What do we do, again, to preserve even the integrity of our elective process? Right after this break, the last segment of our first hour here, I'm going to take that on, Joe, and talk about that as we move again into other stories affecting our lives. Thank you so much for that call. All our callers this morning at 844-967-2789.
Weather brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese and Popcorn Shop at civicmedia.us/shop.
Home of buttery popcorn treats and make your mouth water.
Caramel, cookies and cream, strawberry shortcake and more. civicmedia.us/shop.
Part of the proceeds benefit Wisconsin athletic programs.
This is the story of a very special woman. Just a few knew about her superpowers. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Talking to your kids about the dangers of vaping can be hard. Getting them to listen to hot gossip is easy. So here's some drama you could share with your kid. Dude, did you hear about Cassie and Jake? No, but did you hear that vaping can cause irreversible lung damage and nicotine affects brain development? Nuh-uh. You don't need to gossip if you want to have an open conversation about vaping. So if you want to get tips on when and how to talk to your kids, visit talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
You were supposed to get a colon cancer screening, but stuff came up.
We did have to pick up the twins from practice.
But on the way, we hit a giant pothole.
If you are 45 and older, don't let stuff get in the way of your screening. Visit the Colorectal Cancer Alliance at ccalliance.org.
Here's your updated forecast. A winter weather advisory continues until 1 p.m. this afternoon. Mainly sunny skies and calm this afternoon with a chance of snow. Highs around 36. North winds 20 to 25 miles an hour. Clear skies and quiet tonight. Lows dip down to about 18. Slight chance for scattered rain showers tomorrow. Daytime highs approaching 43. Overcast skies. About an inch of snow today. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Ray Miller. Right now, it's 30.
News and talk. Up, down, and all around the Fox Valley. This is Civic Media.
WAUKradio.com.
We are back in this last segment of our first hour here on Morning Cannolis. Our examination, our discussion of law, government, and the aspiration for justice in America right before the break. This terrific question, this terrific observation by our caller, Joe, calling in today to talk about, again, this broad question. What are you prepared to do to ensure the future of your nation? What are you prepared to do when you see something in even our elective politics, our campaigns, that is so offensive and so completely contrary to the truth and to the fundamental ways in which we do things in America? What is your remedy? And Joe was talking in particular before the break about this woman, the victim of rape, and her case, again, adjudicated in the courtroom of Wisconsin Circuit Court Judge Janet Protasiewicz. To her credit, this particular victim says, you know, I believe strongly in restorative justice, which is this notion that as a part of the remedy for crime, there's engagement between victims and plaintiff and defendants, an attempt to restore, obviously imperfectly, a sense of balance, of understanding, of community, of humanity, and that the criminal justice system that is certainly embracing that notion, but nonetheless has before its tools like incarceration, isn't always the answer or isn't always the exclusive answer. This particular woman, again, advocating for that, Janet Protasiewicz, coming back and saying, yes, I appreciate that. I embrace that too, that notion there should be communication and understanding about healing in this case and others, but nonetheless imposes a criminal sentence in this case. The words taken from this particular victim and used in this campaign by Janet Protasiewicz's opponent to suggest that, in fact, Janet Protasiewicz was not, in fact, pursuing the rule of law in the adjudication of this case. The question Joe asked was, what do you do about that? What are the remedies available? Once again, what can you do? What is my response to that when I see those kinds of things to preserve the integrity of our process? A number of things, Joe, that I would offer. Number one, of course, is advocacy in the public domain. And I know that sounds like the simple thing to do, but getting out there, talking about the news, talking about why this is so incredibly offensive, not only to the elective process, but also to truth. And having that woman, that victim, that wonderfully insightful and humane person coming forward and specifically denouncing the use of her own words and her own situation by a candidate. The public response to that, just like it is in Israel, these other things, should be strong and unequivocal, requires some education, right? Second, there's a thing called the Wisconsin Election Commission. And they're responsible for this, a bipartisan, nonpartisan group, if you will, that is responsible for reviewing not only the regulatory matters of the elections here in Wisconsin. This bipartisan group addressing the issues of elections and processes. Complaints to that group to ensure that the process is pursued with integrity. They do, in fact, take those kinds of complaints on a regular basis. And then a perfect segue, Joe, into what I was going to chat about next, and so appreciate the call for that reason. There's also this thing out there called defamation, right? There, it is the purposeful knowing, intentionally stating something in the public domain that you know is false and doing it with the intent to harm. With respect to public figures, a different standard. We've talked a lot about that in the context of the Dominion lawsuit recently that is in the news once again. But that notion that if you have said something that has compromised my integrity, my position, the understanding that people have of me in the community, there is a remedy in the civil courts to present that and to offer to a judge or a jury the evidence of the harm that has been caused by that particular misstatement, that complete misconstruction of what I am, of what I've said, of what I've done. And damages are possible. Damages, monetary damages, injunctive relief, perhaps also compelling the defendant in a case like that from doing it ever again, all kinds of things, declaratory judgment, declaring simply that the offense conduct happened and that it is not to be believed. So all kinds of remedies out there. Again, coming out of the good question that you have reinforced, Joe, this morning about what are we prepared to do when we see these kinds of things, public advocacy, going to the agencies responsible for our elections, certainly pursuing, and this is what does keep lawyers in business as well, not killed by virtue of Dick the Butcher, but lawyers who are active in ensuring that the rule of law is supported. All great, great, important points, and leading, as I suggested, into one of the other stories also here on the broadcast stations of Civic Media about Dominion voting machines just this past week. The judge presiding over the case doing a couple of very important things. First, denying in part, granting in part, motions for summary judgment, which again, as you heard in the news, this notion that not the facts of the case are clear, and for that reason, the law also clear, and we don't need to go to trial. Well, the judge basically said that I'm going to split this down the middle, if you will, a little bit. He found expressly that the statements made by Fox News on its on-air talent about Dominion and about the big lie, all of that. Clearly, crystal clear, he said, that those statements, those representations by Fox News that we now know based upon the discovery in this case, said unequivocally those were false, untrue, lies, if you will, perpetrated by Fox News in the public domain, said undeniably that is my finding as a rule of law, as a premise of the facts of this case. And then decided not to go the next step, which is what Dominion wanted him to do, and said, you know what, I'm not going to find, however, that even based upon those false statements, whether there was defamation, whether there was such a compromise in the integrity of the Dominion voting machines company, I'm going to leave that to a finder of fact, a jury, and indeed that's what he did. He will be giving them an instruction, of course, that his finding is that these statements, which you're going to hear about during the course of the trial, members of the jury, these are false. These are not true. You should know that as a matter of law and fact. Your question then is whether or not, by virtue of articulating, by voicing those false things repeatedly on the airwaves coming out of Fox News, did that accomplish a defamation, a degradation of the reputation of Dominion voting machines and the company in the public domain? Was there actual malice, the purposeful intent to do this with the purpose of damaging, willfully, knowingly doing exactly what the allegations in the civil complaint are? The judge just this past week, again, an important ruling finding that these statements are false and scheduling this matter on then for trial when coming up in just a few short weeks, going to be impaneling a jury. And with as much as the upcoming proceedings, which we're going to talk about after the break in New York, are going to be fascinating going forward, the trial to watch next month. This judge is also crystal clear that he's going ahead with this trial, is the Dominion lawsuit against Fox News. Testimony presumably by lots and lots of people by Dominion, explaining what it is that is true and what isn't, again, premised fundamentally on the notion the judge has already decided that issue. These are false statements by Fox, and explaining then the ways in which those statements defamed, compromised, damaged Dominion and its voting machine practices. When we come back, more news of rule of law, justice, and government America. Stay with us for that and much more here on Morning Cannolis. Keeps you running. It keeps you running.
You know him as the nose tackle for the green and gold.
1993 to 1999, and again 2001 to 2003.
125 games, 292 tackles, 7 sacks, and a Super Bowl ring. But there's more to life than stats, and there's more to life than football.
You're about to find out.
Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, featuring Packers legend Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram.
Saturday and Sunday at 1 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
Moving Day, a walk for Parkinson's, is happening around the country. Together we can unite in the fight against Parkinson's disease in a safe but exciting and fun way. So let's get moving. Join the Parkinson's Foundation to learn more and register at movingdaywalk.org.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay.
WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250 CV Green Bay.
And all